Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
All right. Well, what a draft and what a debut for Mike McCarthy here in Dallas. You know, there were so many concerns about what this draft would look like. And even the Cowboys' own admission that leading into this draft, that they had a glitch during their mock draft, during a trade, which I loved Jerry sort of toying with us on. Things, by all accounts, not only went well for the Cowboys, but it was as if, in like it was a little bit of Murphy's Law, anything that could go wrong did. They finally got some good karma in this one. Bobby, were you as shocked as I was to see the way this draft went for them this year?
I didn't think there was any way at all CeeDee Lamb would fall to them at 17. And I didn't think there was any way at all that Trayvon Diggs would be there at 51. I didn't think there was any way at all Neville Gallimore would be there at 82. And I didn't think there was any way at all that Bradley and I would be all the way at the back end of the fifth. So they got incredible value all across the board throughout the draft. Just an unreal class. As you said, a lot of times we're sitting there watching the board and going, he just came off and this guy came off and rats, we really liked that guy and we thought that was the target. And, you know, when we do get some sort of like miracle of, you know, Juan Thornhill falls to you or TJ Watt falls to you, then it's been Tristan Hill or it's been Taco Charlton. And it's been a little bit disappointing for the fan base. I think this is the first time in years that fans were just right there with the team every pick going yes, yes, yes. And it's because they get CeeDee Lamb and Trayvon Diggs and Neville Gallimore and all these guys at such incredible value. Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network had said that his greatest value pick in the entire draft, meaning a guy who went more spots away from where DJ had him ranked than any other player in the draft, was Bradley Anae. And he said the Cowboys got him more than 100 picks later than he had him ranked in his class. So value all over the board and a lot of exciting players, and we'll get to talk to a couple of them today.
I thought what was so interesting about the CeeDee Lamb pick was I think I saw one mock draft that had CeeDee Lamb falling to the Cowboys at 17. And I joked on NFL Now when I did the show earlier today, I said, old takes exposed. I said, the fans are going to want the gaudy pick of CeeDee Lamb, but it's going to make more sense for them to go and get a guy like Kalyvon Chaisson. And there was Kalyvon Chaisson, who we talked about, a defensive player. We also talked about CJ Henderson, who had already went the cornerback, and AJ Terrell, who was already gone at that point. And then there was a possibility of trading back, picking up Cesar Ruiz, and then possibly getting another pick, something that I thought was interesting. The Saints went and did. They went and got Cesar Ruiz by just holding at their pick at 24. But the fact that CeeDee Lamb fell to them, and by their own admission, they did not do one mock draft where CeeDee Lamb was there. In fact, they didn't speak to CeeDee Lamb. Obviously, they were familiar with him. He played three times at AT&T Stadium, so they knew who the guy was. But just absolutely fascinating that here was this guy that seemed like such a luxury item, and that Jerry Jones he never came out and said it when Calvin Watkins asked him, "Where are you at, Jerry? Where are you making these picks?" The internet identified that they were, in fact, on their yacht. The side-by-side pictures were absolutely amazing. But such a decadent pick on an extravagant yacht. And I've got to think that Jerry Jones was doing cannonballs off that yacht when things were done, just because of the versatility of CeeDee Lamb. And now when you look at this offense, I just want to put a little respect on my boy, Michael Gallup's name. All these analysts coming out and saying, well, the Cowboys have got Amari Cooper and Terrence Williams. Terrence Williams has been gone. And he's been gone for a long time.
Terrence Williams,
I saw him was out in the club.
Terrence Williams was cut by an XFL team 3 months ago. So, I mean, there have been several transactions since Terrence Williams was last on a football team.
Put respect on Michael Gallup's name, a guy who got increasingly better as the year went on. And I hated that the game in Philly came down to Michael Gallup in the end zone. And he was close. He had that ball. But put some respect on this kid's name. But now you're adding a guy like CeeDee Lamb to the mix when you've already got two guys who had over 1,000 receiving yards next year. I also think what's going to be interesting, Bobby, and you can speak a little bit more to this because you watch a lot of the tape, his contributions that he can make on special teams.
Yeah, he's going to be, and that's actually kind of the interesting thing I think they got in a couple of their picks, not just CeeDee Lamb, who can contribute on special teams potentially, but I think Reggie Robinson, the corner they picked there, they talked about, you know, his special teams ability. I would guess Trayvon Diggs is going to do some special teams work. Diggs is a really hard worker and a guy with a real zeal for knowledge and wanting to do everything he can to help the team win. So I think that, you know, a low-key thing that a lot of people haven't been talking about is how much the Cowboys have improved their special teams unit, which was a disaster last year, from missed kicks to awful kick coverage to telling somebody, you know, to code fair catch and fair catch, no, don't, do what you want. Everything from communication to execution everywhere across the board was awful with the special teams last year. I honestly think it cost them a couple games, and they've done a lot, not just to improve their offense and their defense with this draft and with free agency, but they've also done a lot to help really strengthen and solidify that special teams unit.
Yeah, so let's talk about all the areas that they covered, which is amazing to me that they were able to do it this way this year. They covered the cornerback position. They covered the defensive line position, both in the draft and also with some of their undrafted free agents. Rondale Carter, of course, a guy out of James Madison that they went and picked up. They gave him the type of money that you typically see go to a seventh rounder. That's how much they were buying into him, which interestingly enough, to their center that they decided to trade back for with the Eagles, a guy that went to Wisconsin, very similar to Travis Frederick, a lot of smart guys, those offensive linemen coming out of Wisconsin. So I got to tell you, I was really, really impressed with the draft. And oh, by the way, we've got him in our show today. They went and got that late round quarterback that Mike McCarthy had referenced that he wanted, a guy that they want to have meaningful reps, that they want to develop for trade value, and a guy that slandered Tony Romo a bit in tweets. Tony Romo has a bit of a beehive.
Hey, if we're to look and follow history, then slandering Tony Romo in a tweet on draft day means that he's about to get paid $35 million in 4 years.
You know, you're all about trends and analysis here, Bobby, but I think fans are going to be really impressed with Ben. I know I was when I walked away from our interview. So we've got him coming up. And then also Clay Mack, who's the defensive backs special skills coach that works with
Trayvon Diggs
and Reggie Robinson, who can also sort of tell us, you know, what they expect from this position, an area where the Cowboys really haven't had a shutdown corner in Dallas in recent memory. Although I would argue, I thought Jordan Lewis really began to step up last year. I'd like to see where his game takes him this year under this new defense. But this is a jam-packed show. We keep bringing them to you guys because we're averaging a little over 90,000 downloads and listens. So thank you so much. But let's get to know some of these new Cowboys players, shall we?
Joining us now is new Cowboys quarterback Ben DiNucci from James Madison, the team's seventh round pick. You can follow him on Twitter at B_DiNucci, DiNucci 6. Ben, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate you guys for having me on.
Absolutely excited to have you here. And talk about, I guess, the lead up to the draft. Was Dallas a team you knew was interested? Did you have a lot of conversations with them? And then leading up all the way to getting that phone call from the team?
Yeah. To explain it, it was probably the craziest 3 days of my life. And Saturday kind of put the exclamation point on that. But leading up, you know, Dallas was one of the, you know, four or five teams that I had constant, communications with leading up to it. And Doug Nussmeier, the quarterback coach, was the one who kind of drove the conversations that led up to the weekend. And then as we kind of got closer to this thing, he called me, Wednesday before the draft had started. And then he called me Friday and said, you know, hey, we'll be in touch Saturday just as we kind of get close to this thing. You know, we're keeping you on our radar. We'd love to have you here in Dallas. We're going to see how this whole thing plays out. Obviously they had no idea how everything was going to go. And then at the beginning of the sixth round, he had started, you know, coming in contact and saying, hey, you know, we're trying to get you. We don't want another team to get you. So just keep your phone on you and we'll keep you updated as we get closer to this thing.
I got to tell you, Ben, you got a little exposed. I love Twitter. Bobby and I try to give agents a heads up if we see something on Twitter that maybe they need to clear up ahead of the draft. You couldn't have possibly seen this, but a little Romo slander. Yeah, I have to warn you, Romo has like a beehive as it applies to Dallas. How much love/hate mail did you get when people saw that tweet? And do you want to clarify that?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to clarify it. So it was from 2014, and you know, knowing me, I think I was probably 17 years old at the time, and there was probably a national televised game on, and he had made a bad throw or something, and that's just the first thing that pops in my mind. But shoot, I've had plenty of those before. I've thrown 5 interceptions in a game before, so I'm sure that the Ben DiNucci's horrible tweets were circulating after that too. But no, Tony Romo is one of those guys that very similar situation to me. Came from an FCS school. You know, battled his way in and had one of the, you know, most respected careers in Dallas, and, you know, being able to, you know, kind of come into a similar situation as him and play for the same team as him is you can't ask for anything else.
Well, there are some interesting parallels there, Bobby, if you think about it.
Oh yeah. No, there are tons. And it's funny. I was doing a podcast with Will Kane from ESPN on Monday. And that was when we started talking about Ben and the pick for Ben. Will said that was the first player that came to his mind when he was watching him a little bit. It's like, man, there's some Romo stuff here with like the improvisation and some of the fun little throws on the run. And I got to say, you know, you're not alone, because Dak Prescott on draft night also had a bunch of people retweeting an old tweet where he had said the Cowboys needed to get rid of Romo. And then he had to actually sit in the same room as him, which was probably a little much. But I mean, I think everybody gets it. That's a little in the past, and, you know, nobody wants to.
For the record, I don't think Tony Romo's terrible.
So no, you.
I'll retake that.
I actually
Look,
think.
Bobby, I got to defend him here a little bit. Full disclosure, you know, I don't ask people to air their dirty laundry without giving a little bit of my own.
Oh, yeah,
I might have put a tweet out there about Aaron Andrews a few years back, and then of course we end up working on the sidelines, and I see her, and she's actually lovely, and I know how hard she works. The energy's a little different once you've done their job, and. yeah, it's so I feel for you, Ben.
It's a good thing.
Those are one of the tweets I would have taken back too.
It's a good thing I was able to delete all my tweets about Jane before we started working together. That wouldn't have been good if she would have caught that. Now I'm curious, Ben. Speaking of Dak Prescott, you know he's about to get paid as one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm sure you don't have any illusions of what your job is when you're walking in here, which is you're walking in here to be the backup quarterback and potentially somebody that they can groom to maybe be more down the line. What do you view as your responsibility walking in the door as somebody who's competing for that number two spot behind Dak Prescott?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, from day one, the minute I step in there, I've got to be the same guy that I've been the last 7 years. And whether that's, you know, push Dak for the starting job or just compete to make the team, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I've always been kind of one of those team first guys. So not going to try to overstep any boundaries. And, you know, I know that, you know, Dak's the starter and he has been for the last few years. And, you know, obviously deservingly he's about to get paid for, you know, what he's done on the field the last few years. So the biggest thing for me is, you know, I'm just going to try to come in and learn as much as I can from him. He was in a similar situation to me as being a fourth round draft pick, obviously not in the seventh round, but very similar playing styles and similar situations. So being able to kind of pick his brain a little bit and just, you know, absorb as much information as possible as soon as I walk in the door, I think that will, you know, be beneficial for me.
What I think is intriguing too, Ben, is with the Mike McCarthy regime, we're just as new as dealing with him as you're going to be. But he talked ahead of the draft, the importance of having a backup that, because in Dallas, they've sort of struggled with having guys that they have developed enough that they consider them valuable trade pieces, you know, moving down the line, meaning you're going to get some meaningful reps. Do you feel like Dallas was at sort of an ideal situation for you, given some of the places you can go as a backup and sort of get lost in the mix?
Sure. I think no doubt. And I think, you know, Coach McCarthy's track record speaks for himself. You know, you look what he did with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And I think, you know, Matt Flynn was a seventh round pick that, you know, he had in Green Bay too. And he had a pretty good, you know, career. I think he was in the league 9 or 10 years. So just the guys that he's worked with before. And, you know, after being drafted, you know, some of the other teams' coaches that had, you know, been interested in me too and said, you know, dude, congrats. You couldn't have ended up in a better place with, you know, Coach McCarthy and Coach Nussmeier. So they were just said they were pulling for me and, you know, just to stay in touch, because you never know kind of how this thing goes in the NFL. So extremely excited to get to work with Coach McCarthy and, you know, all that he brings to the table.
In terms of getting to go and work with Coach McCarthy and working with the rest of the team, do you have an idea of what that's supposed to look like yet with some of these COVID restrictions still in place? Do you know, I guess, what's the next step for you in this process of trying to get to work and get prepared for the season?
You know, I don't. You know, my coach, Coach Nussmeier, texted me last night and said, hey, you know, I'm going to give you a ring tomorrow. And we've kind of been laying out a rough schedule, but I think some of these virtual meetings are supposed to start next week. So, They've sent me an iPad that has the playbook and some of this stuff already preloaded into it. So I think, you know, right, I'm in the same position as these guys are. No one really knows how to, you know, react and adapt to this thing. So I think their plan is, you know, we're just going to take this thing week by week. And as soon as, you know, we hear anything else, you know, we'll relay that information as soon as we can to you guys.
What I think is interesting too for you, Ben, is a lot of these guys on offense are coming into a new situation. With the exception, you know, Dak wasn't in the virtual chats last week by all accounts, even though that wasn't officially confirmed. This offense literally has a week on you. They started last Monday and they're learning the terminology and this new offense since there's been a change. So do you think that helps you a little bit? Because I know Dak had talked a little bit about, you know, and this is just really applies to any player when they come from college to the NFL, there's so much information. It's really going to rely on you to be a self-starter. Are you one of those guys, and are you sort of embracing this challenge?
Yeah, so the thing that's actually pretty interesting about all this is, you know, my 5 years in college, I've had five different offensive coordinators. So every spring I was getting used to the plan of, hey, you know, I've got a new coach and I've got another quarterback competition. So I've been a part of five different playbooks and kind of had to learn on my feet quick, you know, in those 5 years. So been around a lot of ball and had a lot of different coaches. So I think that's one of the things that'll play an advantage as I get going here. But kind of, you know, the fact that everyone comes in on ground zero and, you know, it could be a new offense. You know, I think it helps me, and, you know, I'll try to get back up to speed as quick as I can.
You know, you did mention that you came from, you know, you didn't come from a powerhouse program necessarily, but people would be wrong to say that you've never played big time football. You actually did start your career at Pittsburgh. You played some power five ball there. How much do you think your entire college experience, not just what happened to James Madison, but your entire college experience starting at Pittsburgh and then going to James Madison, helped prepare you and get you ready?
Yeah, I tell people all the time, you know, if I had to do it over, I'd do it the exact same way. And, you know, JMU was actually the second school that offered me out of high school, and I'd considered, you know, going there just straight out of high school. But one thing led to another, and, you know, Pitt came in and offered before signing day, and was one of those things that it was 20 minutes from my house. It was power five football, and just the idea that my parents and community could come see me whenever, I couldn't pass that up. But, you know, getting to start six games my redshirt sophomore year, and I think I played in 10 out of the 12. So that was invaluable experience for me, is really the first time that I'd stepped on a college football field. And just being able to carry that confidence over to my junior and senior years at JMU, I think, you know, really helped me a lot in my development as a player.
All right. This is just one of the questions I'm curious about. When Tony came down here, he was really kind of ahead of entourage. He lived in a crib with a bunch of his friends from college. You are used to being close to home. We saw the spread that you had for your watch party. Are you bringing a bunch of buddies down here so you feel a little bit more settled and adjusted?
I'm not going to bring any buddies with me, but one of the things that's actually comforting is one of my players, a defensive end, Rondell Carter from JMU, signed as an undrafted free agent to Dallas as well. So having him down there with me will make the transition a little bit more, a little easy. And my girlfriend's actually from Austin, which is only a few hours from Dallas. So I've been down there a few times in the summer. And then, you know, our national championship game was in Frisco, and we actually stayed at the Omni and got to tour the Star and do all that good stuff. So kind of crazy how this thing kind of comes full circle in a few months.
And it's literally I went to UT. I got to tell you, Ben, Austin is a great place to go get away, have fun on the lakes. We have lakes around here too, but it is nice to be able to be close, at least to go get a family meal.
Lots of hippies.
If you're looking to get a little bit of a break.
Lots of hippies in Austin though. Just, you know, be ready.
Man. I'm just looking forward to having some sun. It's like 45 degrees and rainy every day up here in Pittsburgh. So
it's
getting
great
to see the sun every once in a while.
It is great right now. Blue skies, 80 degrees. I mean, it's going
to
get hot, but, you know, right now it's great.
If I could.
It's great right now. Well, Ben DiNucci, he is the Cowboys' new quarterback, a guy that they thought highly enough that they weren't going to chance, you know, potentially risking having to get into a bidding war in free agency. They took him with their 7th round pick. You can follow him on Twitter at @B_DiNucci6. Ben, thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Looking forward to getting to know you a little bit as I get down there.
Joining us now is Cowboys 3rd round draft pick and Oklahoma defensive tackle, former Oklahoma defensive tackle. He's a Dallas Cowboy now, Neville Gallimore. You can follow him on Twitter at @PathToGreatWork, and that's the number 2. Neville, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. And it's a little bit of an interesting situation. You go into the Cowboys because I know that you were able to train right next door to that facility for several weeks. You were working out at the Baylor Scott and White Sports Performance Center at the Star. Right. You know, I guess, did you ever imagine that you'd be ending up just, you know, half a block down from there?
I did imagine, you know, I always, it's funny, like, it's really crazy how, you know, things work out, because I remember just, you know, even back, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, like, you know, people would ask, or parents ask, you know, if you could live anywhere, where'd you live? And I said, you know, Frisco. It's not only did I say like Dallas area, I say, you know, specifically obviously like the Frisco area. I just love the environment. You know, where I was training at was literally, you know, at the Star. And you fast forward to, you know, a couple of days ago, you know, Dallas Cowboys gave me that opportunity. So it was a great deal. It was a great situation, and I was extremely happy. It was more so unbelievable. Like, who would have thought? Like, you know what I mean?
It is funny. Bobby and I were at that facility, and I remember hearing your name really for the first time because we were interviewing Dez Bryant about his comeback. Did you get a sense of how big the Star is by just seeing the interest, even when Dez Bryant was working out there, and he's now two years removed from that team?
Definitely. It just goes to show, you know, and just even just speaking to a couple guys, just, you know, the narrative always been, you know, Dallas is a team you want to play for. You know, Dallas is a team that you know, just the whole organization, you know, they do a great job in terms of how they take care of their players and just the following out here, right? So, I mean, again, you want to be a part of that. And it's literally, like I said, I've just grown really, really fond of this area, this place. And it's funny, I was even just going through the process of like, man, you know, I don't know who's going to pick me up. I don't really want to move and stuff like that. I kind of got accustomed to this place already. It's only been 4 or 5 months, but the fact that I have to pack up and leave. And then literally, you know, when I got my name called, I was actually in Dallas, like, you know, downtown Dallas. So I'm like, okay, great. Like, I'm going home. It's just a 30-minute drive. So I'm here. I'm pretty much here. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't have to go anywhere. So that was great. That was exciting.
So I know that, you know, a lot of guys walk into situations with the Cowboys and it's a little bit, you know, okay, this is far from home and this is, you know, this is going to be a whole new experience. It's kind of like, you know, first day at a new school and you don't really know anybody. That's not quite the case for you. You've got, you know, you've already been training in Frisco, like we talked about. CeeDee Lamb, your teammate from Oklahoma, was the first round pick. I know you'd been training with Ladarius Hamilton there, and he got signed by the Cowboys. And of course, I know one guy who's really excited to have a fellow Canadian now get snatched up by the Cowboys is defensive lineman Tyrone Crawford. So does it feel a little bit to you like, you know, hey, this is already kind of a familiar spot for me?
Definitely, because like I said, even before, I used to come up to, like, you know, to that DFW area a lot, just going to, just throughout, you know, since like college, because like, my best friend, Kenneth Mann, he's from here. He's from, you know, Fort Worth. So I've kind of got accustomed, you know, I was kind of really informed about the tradition. And then, you very quickly understand when you come to Dallas that, you know, majority of people are Dallas fans. You know, they ride hard, you know, for, you know, Dallas fans. And it's funny because, even funnier story, a few days before the draft, I remember I was getting my car wash, and the lady I was working there, she asked me, she's like, hey, I don't mean to, you know, to be nosy, but are you a Dallas, do you play for the Dallas Cowboys? And I was like, you know, at the time I was like, no, I'm just kind of going through this draft process. She's like, okay. And then, you know, fast forward to that, I'm a Dallas Cowboy.
You gotta go find her.
You gotta go back and get her something signed. Be like, you tipped it.
You called it. You spoke it
into
existence.
That energy she brought. She did. She spoke into an existence for you, Neville.
But I feel like, you know, a lot of people tipped it, because even my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, she's actually been a Dallas Cowboy fan for the longest, like even back when I was, you know, for as long as I've known her, and I've probably known her since I was a 6th, 7th grade or whatever. So there's a lot of people that I actually spoken into, but not definitely. I'll probably go see her, because I always go get a car washer and I'll tell her like, hey, hope you don't think I was lying. I am a Dallas Cowboy.
All right. So speaking to, like, as you already know, the fan base, people were so excited about this draft this year. How many Twitter and Instagram followers did you pick up the minute your name got announced? Because look, I went to Texas, so I'm having a hard time with like the CeeDee Lamb pickup and obviously the
Neville. Oh yeah, I got to cover the Longhorn shirt.
Right, we got to cover up. I do notice that I am sort of wearing this like the OU colors right now.
But yeah, it looks like you got on the crimson.
I got a little bit of the crimson, but there is such a familiarity with, you know, the Texas and OU players just here in the state of Texas. How many fans did you pick up when it was announced you were going to have that star on your helmet?
I'm not going to lie to you. It jumped pretty quickly. I think, you know, before I got my name called, I think I was probably 12K, like a hard fought 12K, you know, and then literally, you know, 2 days later, my stuff is at like 34,000, you know, it was pretty.
It's going to keep going. Just heads up. It's just going to keep on going.
Yeah, no doubt.
You saw Dez Bryant working out there. It used to be kind of a joke on social media. There was a time, I don't know if it's still the case, but there was a time where Dez Bryant had more followers on Twitter than any of the other three teams in the NFC East. So he had more than the Redskins, the Eagles, and the Giants did on their own.
Wow.
But we mentioned there, you did work out at the Sports Performance Center at the Star. I know one of the guys you got to work with and was helping you train ahead of the draft was Pete Jenkins, who is the kind of legendary defensive line coach.
Right.
Well, what do you think you learned from him and how well he helped you prepare for this rookie season?
I mean, I got to give, you know, a huge shout out to Coach Pete Jenkins because, you know, again, he really just, you know, prepared me. You know, obviously he turns to, you know, becoming a better defensive lineman, but just, you know, mentally, you know, he's a guy that he's been in the game, you know, for so long. He has so much respect. So, you know, to the fact that I was even able to have access, you know, to a guy like that on a daily basis definitely helped me out. And he made the process, you know, I mean, not say it was fun altogether, but again, he just helped me understand, you know, what to expect, kind of like the mindset mentality you have to have, you know, going into it. So it was good to have him.
You know, when you talk about some of the guys you're going to be playing on the line with, I think of DeMarcus Lawrence, and I think of a guy like Tyrone Crawford, who had DeMarcus Lawrence riding his bike with him to the facility every day. Tyrone is a grinder, and if he sees you talking to the media too much, Tyrone's going to grab you and hold you accountable. That's just who he is. Right. He's kind of the elder statesman, one of my favorite guys on that team. I've known him since he was a rookie. But have you heard from any of those guys? And then even the prospect of the possibility of a guy like Randy Gregory and Aldon Smith coming back.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had to play like Tyrone Crawford. He gave me a shout out on Twitter. He's kind of, you know, let me know he's happy to be a part of the – happy that I was a part of the program. And Gerald McCoy, who's also, you know, a former Sooner, you know, the big bro, he gave me a shout out, which was a love too. And, you know, again, I feel like this just kind of – the social media kind of comes with it. You know, like I said, I'm just kind of playing my role. But, you know, I'm hoping that the, you know, this pandemic kind of calms down, because, like I said, I was really looking forward to kind of just jumping into it and getting back to, you know, football. So this stuff is kind of, I feel like literally, you know, you find your ways to get it in, get, you know, get in train and get acclimated to stuff. But it's like, at the same time, it's like, you know, I feel like social media is, if not now more than ever, the primary, you know, resource for, you know, everything. And like I said, I'm not really like a big old social media guy, but I mean, hey, here we are, right?
Neville, you were a guy that I know the Cowboys had a really high grade on, higher than you went. They viewed you as, you know, a high second, potentially late round first type of player. There was a lot of buzz from like Tom Pelissero and Daniel Jeremiah that, you know, Neville Gallimore's a guy who could sneak into the back end of the first round here. Teams really like him. And then you last all the way to 82, you know, middle of the third round. Did you feel, I guess, disrespected by that? Did you feel like people were giving you enough credit for the type of career you had at Oklahoma and the type of player that you are?
I mean, you know, like I said, everything happens for a reason, right? You know, whether I would have been, you know, upset or sad, you know, it wouldn't have changed anything, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm just really more grateful for the fact that I got an opportunity. You know, a lot of people, you know, I guess a lot of people kind of look at it as, you know, hey, you know, you should have got drafted, you know, way earlier. But at the same time, you know, still in a great position to still, you know, do great things, right? So, I mean, again, I'm just looking for that opportunity to grind and earn everything. You know, it was a humbling experience. And I'm the kind of guy, like I said, I don't really dwell on, you know, what people say. It's more so actions. But, again, I'm just grateful for the fact that the Dallas Cowboys chose me. It couldn't have been a greater situation, to be honest. So, I mean, I try my best not to really look at that. You know, that's in the past, obviously, but it happens. I'm here, and I have an opportunity, you know, to earn that star on my helmet.
And such an interesting opportunity, as we were talking to Ben about this. I mean, all of you guys are sort of starting off on the same level. In other words, this is going to be a new defense with Mike Nolan and his group. Granted, you've got a guy like Leon Lett that's back, but they're getting the playbooks. They got their virtual OTA started last week. Do you like having a little bit of that advantage and sort of being able to start off sort of ground zero with everybody else? And I'm also curious, how are you keeping yourself engaged? And look, I'm doing my online workouts, man. I like to be in the gym 3-4 days a week. It is a little bit of a challenge, but do you find that you're getting in a sweet spot, a little bit of a groove right now?
I mean, like I said, you really don't know, right? Because like I said, everything is still pretty much closed down from a football perspective. But like I said, I'm just trying to make the most of my opportunity in terms of, you know, training outside and just doing what I can. Because like I said, you really don't know, right? Obviously, as this week continues to progress, you know, I'll gather more and more information. And, you know, there's still, you know, the organization is still doing a great job in terms of still trying to find ways for us to, you know, get adjusted. But obviously with this pandemic, you know, going on, it's still, you know, obviously, you know, hindering the process. But I mean, we take it day by day.
Well, Neville Gallimore, one of the newest Dallas Cowboys, their third round pick. I'll tell you what, Jane, I'm really looking forward to the training camp battle, knowing that Texas Longhorn Connor Williams is on the inside now. And so Neville will be one-on-ones with Connor Williams, likely. We'll get the OU Texas juice there. But we're all very excited to have Neville here. You can follow him on Twitter, even though he's not much of a Twitter guy. You can help contribute to that explosion at Path to Great Work, the number 2. Neville, we appreciate you so much, man.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate y'all.
Joining us now is defensive back skills trainer Clay Mack. You can follow him on Instagram, not Twitter, because Jack Dorsey is a tyrant. You can follow him on Instagram at Clay Mack Skills. We're working on that Twitter account though, right, Clay?
Absolutely, absolutely. I expect it to be up here within the next week or so.
Good deal.
You gotta quit give the fans some background. You can't call Jack Dorsey a tyrant and not give just
a lot of
small
people call Jack Dorsey. A lot of people call Jack Dorsey a tyrant. Okay, so basically Clay had a very large Twitter following that you know, a lot of high school kids would depend on that as their way to, you know, kind of get to Clay and say, hey, Clay, I'd love to train with you. I'd love to do some stuff. And it was a great resource tool. And of course, occasionally Clay would share some videos on there with original music. And apparently the Twitter lords decided that it was pirated or something. I don't know. But we're going to work on it. We're going to, you know, start the hashtag Screw Jack Dorsey or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. He gets a lot of pressure from a lot of people. I think that'd be a popular move if we dogpiled on him a little bit more.
Jack Dorsey is a grinder. This guy walks to work every day. He goes in his like meditation hut. Like, he's got to respect the grinders, Clay. So like, I feel like he's going to respect your hustle.
Yeah.
And he's going to give you your Twitter account back. So.
Well, and the funny thing about it is that, you know, like, you know, I had somebody just like kind of do a little research for me and like send an email and kind of prop some stuff. But not because I've never received the email. You know, typically they'll send you an email.
I got one
saying that they love da 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 whatnot. I never received the email. So yeah. I had somebody to prompt something. They sent me one, and I apologized to them. I mean, because yeah, you know, I'm not into like, I'm not trying to be like, you know, like the tyrant or the go against the grain guy. I'm not that. You know what I'm saying? Whatnot. I just hadn't received nothing back. So, you know, we're gonna have to report. You know, go to Plan B now.
Hashtag free Clay Mack. Now, if you're not familiar with Clay, which you should be, Clay trained several defensive backs across the NFL. I think most notably the Cowboys crush Jamal Adams. He's worked with Jamal since sixth grade. Jeff Okuda, who just went third overall. I believe I actually saw you on ESPN hugging Jeff after he was picked by the Lions. And of course, worked with Byron Jones, really helped get Byron cleaned up when he made the move to corner, did a lot to help him. Somebody that Byron trusted so much that actually had Clay come out to California. I remember bumping into you at training camp last year when I saw you walking across the field, and it was Byron was there and wanted you to work. And I know you also work with two of the Cowboys' new draft picks, Reggie Robinson from Tulsa and Trayvon Diggs from Alabama. Before we jump to those, I guess just tell us, how do you get into this? Because a lot of people, I think, wonder, like, you know, how does somebody become a Clay Mack or a D-Rob or you know, anybody like that? How did you get into this?
You know, I was actually, I was in corporate America for a long, you know, for a while. And you know, I'm sitting at my desk. I was a loan officer at Countrywide Home Loans. And got a phone call from my old high school coach, James Jones. I went to Kimball High School. So phone rung, and he wanted me to come out because I was a college All-American, I mean, a high school All-American. So he wanted me to come out and just kind of look at some of his defensive backs. So I did and thought I was going to be out there 30, 45 minutes or so. Ended up being out there for two and a half hours and went back the next day, And like for me, the thing that struck me was that, you know, it was a I was living in Carrollton, man. You know, Kimball is in Oak Cliff, so it was an hour drive for me. So I don't know what it was. It's some kind of intuition or something, or I don't know what it was, but I became addicted to it. You know what I'm saying? So, and the reason being, I think, because, you know, sometimes these high school kids, you know, they're not privy to some of the things that the college guys are privy to as it relates to advanced schematics. You know what I'm saying? Another chance to work on your skill set and fundamentals, things that you'll need, you know, to prepare yourself for the next level and survive on the next level. So when I was able to come back, the stuff that I learned, I was eager at that particular point to, like, you know, try to teach the younger guys. You know what I'm saying? So it just kind of materialized from there. Then bumped into to D-Rob, which him and me and his family, one of his family members, played college ball together. And it pretty much just started from there. So it was me, D-Rob, and a guy named Marjan Hooks. We started all together at the same time. So that was our little group. And then from there, it just got infectious, and it just grew from there.
And so many guys, as Bobby had referenced, come to you guys. I want to put something to bed because, as you can imagine, my Twitter mentions, I know Bobby's, they get so excited about this notion of Jamal Adams coming to Dallas. Now, the Cowboys, in good faith, tried to go get him last year. It didn't work out. Does this feel like an Earl Thomas situation for you, for the Cowboy fans? In other words, even if the Cowboys had traded for him, they're going to still have to pay this guy top market value. Was it ever a real possibility?
Well, you know, and funny you say that. That was my logic behind it. You know, okay, even if they got him, they're gonna have to pay him. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, is it worth it? I mean, from a business perspective, you know, is it worth it just get him just cause, you know what I'm saying, and then just have him for a small stint, get your fan base, you know, riled up and a whole nine, and then you have to ship him off, or, you know, you can't come to an agreement, you know what I'm saying, from, you know, contractual wise. But naturally, you know, Dallas is a market that he loves. I mean, he absolutely loves, you know, Dallas. And, you know, out there, and, you know, naturally, I have a very intimate relationship with him and his family. And not to, you know, kind of belabor the point per se, but it was a lot of excitement around that. It was a lot of excitement around that. You know what I'm saying? It contained excitement because, you know, naturally, he wanted to respect his current organization and whatnot. But if it would happen, oh my God, even ecstatic.
The fans would have loved it. And Clay, just a personal story, you know, I, as Bobby likes to point out, my bourgeoisie shows, I'm a big fan of Nick and Sam's. It's where I did my Dez Bryant sit down when he got cut.
She's very bougie.
Very bougie. And it was during the Conor McGregor fight recently, I had asked to get a table in one of my sections, and I was told Jamal Adams had the table. And they said, you know, if you don't mind, like, coming early and leaving, Jamal is bringing some friends and he's going to come sit down. So we stayed for the fight. And I said, Jamal, I'm happy to get my table. He's like, no, you good, girl. Like, and he sat at, like, this other table with his friends. And I was like, what a great dude. But it just sort of spoke to, you know, some guys will come in, they'll bump you from their table. Like, just a down to earth, cool dude. I would have loved to have seen him in Dallas. I hated wet blanketing that for a lot of people, but unfortunately, I just didn't see the Cowboys, given their current situation, being able to give up much, especially when you saw what they were able to do with the draft and all those picks this year.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the thing about it is that to kind of piggyback on that notion about the whole table deal and all that, he have a more conscious about, you know, how he presents himself. I think a lot of that is uprooted, you know, through his family as well. His mom is a really, really big stickler about, you know, image and things of that sort. even coming through high school and LSU and things of that sort, you know, Jamal was like this. Okay, so you know the typical high school kid, especially when you were number one kid in the country or, you know, top rated as he were, whatever the case may be, you really, really kind of want to be visible throughout the community and throughout your city, whatever the case may be. Jamal might go to a high school party or something like that at 9:30 or whatever the case may be, but he might be back at home at 10:30. Comes in type of deal. Slide out the party, you know what I'm saying? Be back home, buddies are calling him, you know, hey man, you know, we looking for you, where you at? I mean, I'm at home. You know what I'm saying? Type of deal and whatnot. But it made sense, you know, once, you know, they go and watch him work out or watch us work out. You know what I'm saying? I tell this story all the time. The summer of his junior year going into a senior year, we worked out in the summer 52 days in a row at 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
52 days in a row at 5:30 in the morning. And this was before the high school workout. So you know how the high school kids have to report in the morning times and, you know what I'm saying, or whatever, and get the school workout in. No, we done already worked out before the school works out. You know what I'm saying? So mentally, he's been a pro for a long time.
Do not tell the fans this, Clay. The fans
you're going to get them to it. They're going to love it more.
They can't handle this.
They're going to fall in love even more. But we got a couple guys that they can fall in love with that I know that you think highly of and that the Cowboys thought highly of. Trayvon Diggs being the first one, a guy who actually played receiver for the start of his career, has not actually been playing corner very long. I guess talk about his ceiling and also how far away from being a finished product you think he is, given that he's still relatively new to the position.
Well, I think in relation to the finished product deal, you know, naturally, you know, any rookie that comes into this league, you know, there's a learning curve. You know what I'm saying? You know, no matter how advanced you are, you know, you don't see the type of talent that you do in this league on this level that you do in college. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, granted that, you know, he was able to go against, you know, a couple of first rounders and Jerry Jeudy and Ruggs and Devontae, where he'll be a first rounder next year out of Alabama, along with the other kids, 17 also. So he was fortunate in that case. You know, he have all the intangibles. I mean, he have everything that you need. He have the size. He have the twitch. And that's the whole misnomer about, you know, bigger guys also, is that bigger guys typically is not twitchy. You know what I'm saying? Well, you know, I tell guys, I mean, that's if you're a big guy and somebody to tell you that you move pretty good to be a big guy, I tell all my guys, consider that an insult. You know, because they don't tell small guys that you move well to be a small guy. You know what I'm saying? So one of the things that we worked on with Trayvon, because I mean, I've been training for a while now. I mean, you know, yeah, naturally he's here and I've had him through the draft process, but I had him prior to that as well. You know what I'm saying? So the one thing that Bob always worked on with him is that, you know, don't allow a statement like you move pretty good to be a big guy, you know what I'm saying, to insult you. You know what I'm saying? So we've always worked on his twitch. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a plus. The biggest thing I think is a plus is his ball skills. His ball skills is off the charts. When I say off the charts, off the charts. And I think that's a direct correlation to the fact that, yeah, like you said, he do have a receiver background. You know, naturally, you know, he's the younger brother of Stephon Diggs or what have you. But I think those are some of the attributes that are helping while he tried to cut through that learning curve. Okay. But as far as his ceiling, he hadn't touched his ceiling because he's only been playing DB about 2 years now. You know what I'm saying? Because remember, not last year, but the year prior to that, remember, he got hurt.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So he didn't play a full season. You know what I'm saying? So he's really, really just kind of getting his groove. You know what I'm saying, or what have you. So that's one thing that I'm going to do is that him and I, we're going to sit down and we're going to evaluate some of his old film, as much DB film that we can, okay? And then and I'm going to act like, you know, really I don't know him per se, you know what I'm saying? And I'm going to be really, really critical about a lot of things, whatnot, so we can just, you know, again, try to speed him up a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And you know, hopefully the scheme will allow him to just kind of be instinctive for a while, you know what I'm saying, as he get his football IQ from the professional level. You know what I'm saying? So he can grow and develop, you know what I'm saying, from that. But, you know, I think the more complicated the schemes, I think that what slows a lot of guys down as well.
You know him personally, and I've only had a few passing moments with him as we lead up to the draft and after he got picked. What stood out to me about him was, you know, obviously talking about his childhood and the fact that Stephon really stepped up as a father figure, but also just his work ethic. He was asked what are his strengths, and he didn't want to focus on that. He wanted to focus on his weaknesses. And so you talk about being very critical with him when you evaluate the tape. Is he the type of guy that can handle that stuff? And is he one of those sponges that receives that criticism well and wants to improve?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, even with me, though, you know, I push his buttons a little bit. But the thing about it is that he don't react. He don't get a reaction. I mean, I don't, it, there's not no wrinkles in his forehead. It's not a side like I'm getting on his nerves. It's none of that. It's just, let's get it again. But I'm gonna tell you one of the unique things about it. And I think just a testament of him and his character and his you know, how he was raised and all the things that he went through is that even going through the draft process, okay, so trained over at him and they have certain days to train guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, guys like me and D-Rob, you know, we go in and we have, I think, 3 days a week or whatever. But I was actually training Trayvon 5 and 6 days a week. And that was because he was bugging me. Like, coach, we're finished at 12. What time can I come? 1 o'clock. You know what I'm saying? Because my deal is this. Whenever you get an athlete that wants it like that, you have to feed him. You have to feed him. You know what I'm saying? And especially by me being a hometown guy, a Cowboy, I want to see him be successful to my team. You know what I'm saying? So, but lo and behold, we didn't know that he was coming here. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to tell you something that's funny about that. He mentioned that. He mentioned it. You know what I'm saying? So if you notice one of his interviews, he said, you know, it was a dream of mine. He said, you know, I talked about it. You know what I'm saying? And just so happened, it came true. Well, he wasn't lying when he said that. We talked about it. He's like, man, you know, Mac, we were riding one day. He said, man, I love Dallas, man. I said, really? I said, well, the thing about Dallas, it's a perfect balance. It's not too fast. It's not too slow. It have fast lanes. Now, don't get me wrong. I said, but it also have slow lanes as well. So you can kind of create your own balance and whatever, you know, your disposition is, you can fit, you know what I'm saying? You can find your lane per se. He said, yeah, I see that. He said, man, I love Dallas. I said, oh, okay. And we just left it alone. We left it alone. And when he got drafted, he texted me, and because he hadn't came across the screen yet. So he texted me, and he said, let's get to work and put a big star on it. Huh. And I didn't know about it. And it started clicking, and my upstairs TV is YouTube TV. My downstairs TV is Spectrum. So one of them is a little bit faster than the other.
So ran downstairs.
I ran downstairs. I have a loft, so I ran downstairs real quick. And I turned it, and as soon as I turned it on, it was showing his highlights. And man, I flipped. I absolutely flipped. Yeah, man, that's my guy. That's my guy. I love him.
And when we talk about, you know, the type of character Jamal Adams has and the type of person he is, I think sometimes people have the impression that guys who are, you know, stars that are coming out of big schools like a Trayvon Diggs from Alabama, that they expect a big ego or something like that. In my experience, the 2-3 times I've dealt with Trayvon, it's been very humble, very quiet. He's very soft-spoken. He actually kind of reminds me of it. Jane and I always talk about how smart and quiet Amari Cooper is, another former Alabama guy. Yeah. And Trayvon's kind of the same way on the defensive back side, just quiet. Yeah. And you know, but don't mistake that for a lack of competitiveness or a lack of edge, because he's got it.
Exactly. He got it. And funny, we're talking about that and not to bring up somebody from another team or whatever the case may be, but during this pre-draft process, I told Jeff Okuda one time in our training session, I said, Jeff, you need to meet Trayvon. He said, really? He said, yeah. I said, because you got dispositions are real similar. Jeff is like that too. You know what I'm saying? In fact, I had to get on Jeff about, you know, all his media obligations, getting on NFL Network, getting on ESPN, you know, things of that sort of whatnot. But he's just not like, you know, he's not in an attention monger per se. You know what I'm saying? He's just not that. But Trayvon the same way. You know what I'm saying? He can live with it. He can live without it. You know what I'm saying? He just kind of just go about his own way. And so once they met, and so Jeff called me. He said, you know, I finally met Trayvon. I said, okay, so what happened? He said, I love him. I said, really? I said, I told you though. I said, because y'all dispositions are similar. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I definitely co-sign on what you're talking about as it relates to, you know, he's not an ego guy. He's not that. But I think also that's a you can attribute that also to the fact that just like how you said about how his brother raised him, you know what I'm saying, or was that father figure? Well, his brother also did an excellent job by making Trayvon work for what he got. And everybody know the contract that his brother has. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So his brother's rich, you know, but he didn't approach Trayvon like that. Mm. Okay. He didn't spoil Trayvon, but he made sure Trayvon didn't want for nothing. You know what I'm saying? But Trayvon went in college driving around in big Benzes and the G wagons and all that. It wasn't that. He actually made Trayvon appreciate, you know what I'm saying, the hard work that it was going to take for him to get to where he's going. So that's the one thing that I appreciated about their relationship.
Man, I appreciate Stephon so much. I've always been a fan of his when I do some Minnesota games, but I mean, even after all this, before we let you go, Clay, because you've worked with Byron Jones and, you know, Mike McCarthy has finally said this is going to be a 4-3 defense with some 3-4 principles. What do you think Dallas is still lacking at that cornerback position? There really hasn't been a shutdown corner per se in Dallas in quite some time. What do you think that they need in order to be effective there at that position?
You know what? I don't even think it's a personnel deal, to be honest. I think I think it's the fact that, you know, you got to let guys, they'll kind of do what they can do. You know what I'm saying? So a good example, you know, I trained Cheeto. I trained Byron. I trained, you know, Kayvon Frazier and some of the other guys as well. But the thing about it, what I noticed that in our offseason, even like we was going over certain techniques and things of that sort, whatnot, they were only allowed to do one technique. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, naturally, you know, other people watch film as well. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's like, you know, one day we came into a training session and even Cheeto was like, you know, hey, look, you know, I need to know how to, you know, kind of counter some of the releases that Amari Cooper is giving me, you know, like at practice. And I said, okay, what kind of press techniques are you guys using? And he showed me. I said, okay, well, I would do this. He said, well, we can't necessarily do that. You know what I'm saying? I said, well, you had a disadvantage. Because as soon as somebody see that, you know, from a film scouting perspective, that this is only what you're doing, I mean, they're going to figure you out and it's going to be a problem. You know what I'm saying?
That's fascinating.
So, which is, exactly. it was a unique, just for those who don't know, that's a unique Pete Carroll, Chris Richard, Gus Bradley created technique. It's called a kick step. And it's very much about letting a receiver guide you. And so just to give that the name, they call it the kick step.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that with the kick step, you know, it kind of keeps you stationary. A little bit, you know, you got to keep in mind that somebody's coming at you, but you standing in place per se. They don't have to run. Receivers don't have to run into you. You know what I'm saying? They try. They can go around you. They can move you a couple of times. You know what I'm saying? They can go left. They can go right. And then once a DB get beat, you know what I'm saying, on a wide release or a wide inside release, well, now he's going to try to move and he's going to abandon that technique. Okay. Well, with that said, then you can't go into, in my opinion, you can't go into a game or cover somebody. Let's just say like somebody with exotic releases, like Amari and Judy and Julio and Ridley and, you know, Devontae Adams and guys like that, you have to have multiple ways to attack those guys. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, if they allow those guys, you know what I'm saying, to have multiple ways to defend guys, I think they'll be absolutely fine. They're great athletes. They're absolutely fine. But, you know, when you pigeonhole them, I think that's the problem more so than anything.
Man, that's fascinating, Bobby. I don't know if the fans have thought about it. I'm certainly going to go look at some tape now as a result of that, because I think that's fascinating. Yep. Clay, I always love talking to some of you guys that this is what you do. You marinate in it. You work with so many of the guys in the league, and such a credit to you and even D-Rob with some of the wide receivers that you guys have. I know this is the time of year you're typically pretty busy and even more so doing this thing virtually. Thank you for jumping in on. We'd certainly love to have you back on. If you'd like, because I know there's a lot of other guys we want to talk about, Jordan Lewis's development, what we can expect from this Reggie Robinson guy, but we do have other people to get into the pod.
Yeah, no problem at all. Anytime. I've been waiting to jump on with you guys. I've been trying to catch up with you and Jane down in Oxnard. I know Ron Slavin.
I love Ron. He's the best.
Yeah, and he talks highly about you. You know, he was like, you know, hey, look, you know, let's go find Jane, and you know, with the mix, all the media and everybody, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, we're just gonna find you, but I'm glad we're finally able to talk.
All right, well, like I said, by all accounts, Bobby, it felt like this was the sort of draft that the Cowboys not only needed as a fan base, but that Mike McCarthy needed as the new head coach. I think what we saw was a lot of influence from McCarthy. But also, I know you gave them the props that they deserved on Twitter, but the scouting department for what they were able to accomplish in this one as well.
Yeah, no, they did an excellent job. And the Cowboys have a really good staff of area scouts and national scouts. Everybody knows Will McClay, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones. But Drew Fabianich, Mitch LaPointe, their national scouts, Lionel Vital, their area scouts, Ross Winchy in the West, Klein Kubiak the Midwest, Brett Maxey in the Mid-States, Sam Garza, Justin Stuckey, Chris Vaughn, who I know you know very well, Longhorns. And they have some scouting assistants there as well, like Eric Ellingworth and Bo Taliaferro. And so they've got a really strong scouting staff. And I think you saw what they were able to do. No offense to any past regimes, but I think you saw what the scouts were able to do when they didn't necessarily have a Jason Garrett or a Rod Marinelli pounding on the table for their guy.
You know, I do think that was interesting, that how much given the challenges that came with this draft, you know, the Cowboys, I don't know exactly how many people they were able to get in the building. Do you know that answer?
I don't think they were able to get any of their visitors in the building. They scheduled them. I don't think they were actually able to get anybody at the facility, though.
I know Nashville got 10 in. New Orleans got none in. And, you know, talking to some of my folks within the building with the Cowboys, they just said that it would force them to rely on the tape. But, you know, keep in mind, these NFL coaches aren't watching the college tape during the year. They're just as busy as we are, focusing very myopically on the NFL in the season. That when they're scouting tape from guys in the league or undrafted free agents that might still be out there. So I thought this was a unique opportunity for some of these scouts to really show some of the work that they've done. And then also the reliance that the Cowboys have on their guys.
Yeah. Brian Broaddus made the point on DallasCowboys.com during the draft show, said that his first draft with Bill Parcells when he was here, Parcells just let them run it because Bill knew, I just came in, I haven't been studying these guys like they have. So he went ahead and trusted the scouting staff. And of course, in 2004 and onward, Bill was there the whole time. So Bill started calling shots. But the very first year he was there, he really deferred to the scouts. And I think that maybe that'll change in the future with Mike McCarthy. But I think that's another reason why McCarthy did it, to your point, is that he's had a lot on his plate. He was, you know, interviewing for jobs. He wasn't necessarily doing a whole bunch of college scouting. And this is something that the Cowboys do year round. They start work in June and they plow through all the way until the end of April with their draft work. They get May off and that's about it.
Well, and you plow through a lot of this too. While I might be busy during the year focusing on the team and getting interesting nuggets as it relates to the season, I don't think a lot of people realize, Bobby, that this is a lot of the stuff that you do behind the scenes. And I think as a result, that's why we've had such an interest from our fans with some of the relationships that you've built with these college players, with some of their agents. And so I thank you for allowing this podcast to shine at a time. I know that people wanted not only the distraction, but they wanted information. So I don't say it enough, but you are my MVP.
You say it all the time.
All the time. But I really do appreciate some of the work that you've put in. And you are such an invaluable resource, not only to me, but I think the Cowboy football fans. So thank you for shining during this time, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it. We're like peanut butter and jelly. It's just, it works.
And to our fans, thank you for making this show work. How many downloads have we had at this point, Bob?
A lot. I know I haven't gotten the most recent numbers, but I know as of last week, we're averaging over 90,000 for the last three episodes.
That is wild. And just for context, that's typically what one of our episodes looks like during the season when we do them weekly. So thank you for your interest. Thank you for letting us continue to grow what was a hobby into what we now consider a podcast that we are proud of. And we will see you on the next one.
Good thing I was able to delete all my tweets about Jane before we started working together.